welcome to another episode of the Coastal Drone Podcast. I am your host, Coastal Kate, and today we have an extra special guest joining me in my office, not via Zoom, which is an exciting thing over the last couple of months. We have Coastal Drone's newest team member, operations manager, Vince Hannay. Welcome, Vince.
Hi, Kate.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
Yeah, and every day this week.
Every day, it's going to be great.
And for the future, too.
Yeah.
So Vince has been a flight reviewer with us for a while now, and is stepping into a larger role as ops manager as I transition out to take some time off to have a baby.
Yeah.
Which is, time off is going to be necessary, I think. I'm leaving my first baby, which is Coastal Drone, my first real baby. We were chatting earlier this week about some flight review, I don't know, do we call them pet peeves?
Yeah, they're pet peeves. They're weaknesses that I've found in a lot of flight review candidates that I think that a lot of our listeners would like to be aware of before they come see me.
Yeah, this is good to figure out some of these tougher things in advance before you find them out in front of the flight reviewer.
Absolutely.
One of the questions that we often get is what to bring. And so we have in the flight review prep guide that we post for all of our candidates online, a list of documents. In addition to that, though, there are some things that are not mandated by Transport Canada. There's nothing in the cars that says that you need to bring these things, but there can be a pretty good case made for why they should be on site with you. So we don't have them in our list on the course online because they're not mandated, but what are some of these things that you see the really prepared candidates coming with?
You know what? I find that a lot of the candidates that come fully prepared or even over prepared, they make me smile, and the flight reviews go a lot better for them. It looks to me like they've done their due diligence and they've prepared for the worst at all times. So one of those things is a fire extinguisher, a first aid kit. The high-vis vests. Like, when I see a candidate come with all their paperwork completed and those pieces of equipment, I'm thinking this person means business and they've come here to succeed.
Yeah, I agree. I think I never tell people that first aid kit and fire extinguisher are mandatory, but when you look at the cost of those things, like, you can get a pretty decent fire extinguisher for $20 to $40.
Absolutely.
First aid kit.
Yeah. Cheaper than redoing your flight review.
No kidding. And you can convince me that you don't need a fire extinguisher when you're doing a flight review at the location that we have here, because there's a building close by where you can get a fire extinguisher and you can get a first aid kit. So if you can come up with a good enough rationale why you didn't bring one, then I'm not gonna fail you because you didn't have one. But like you're saying, it does show a level of preparation that I at least like to see people acknowledging that they don't have one.
Absolutely.
And where the closest one might be. There is the requirement in the cars to brief your crew on the location and use of emergency equipment as part of your checklist. So that might be the conversation, is that I don't have this today. We're in a grassy field.
Mm-hmm.
The fire extinguisher is not going to put the LiPo battery out, or battery fire out, if there is one.
Definitely.
But it can put out the things that it catches on fire, which is a large grassy field for our flight reviews.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like smart things to have, and I would encourage people to pick them up. Have you ever had people bring, like, sand or kitty litter or something?
No, it's a good point. I've had on my last one, I had a fire blanket they brought, which is compact and quite easy to bring around.
Yeah, probably lighter than a fire extinguisher, too.
Yeah, and I'd like to open this up as well to anyone that wants to email in or just Facebook or whatever. I'd like to hear whatever your comments would be as well, different options.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You can email info@coastaldrone.co. or Instagram us, Facebook Messenger, or put it on our Facebook page. What's in your kit that maybe isn't standard that other people should know about? Speaking of which, do you carry like an actual paper CFS and VTA and VNC when you go flying?
You know what? I do. I do that. And it came from the olden days when I was a manned pilot. And I always had to, even though we had what's called an electronic flight bag, so we had all our charts, everything on the iPad, we always had to prove that we had a paper copy. And I don't think we have to with this stuff, because our whole operation is done via, you know, like a phone or an iPad. But I always have a paper copy to have in case I was to get ramped, in case transport was going to come up and ask me questions about it. But again, I don't believe you need that, just as long as you have the ability to acquire the information that's needed at the time.
Yeah, exactly. I'd want my candidates to feel comfortable interpreting the information on a VTA or a VNC, or knowing if there is an emergency, how to use the CFS to get the correct phone number to contact the right people, like the NAV Canada tower at that particular airport or something like that. But yeah, as long as there's an electronic way that you can access that information.
Absolutely.
I also like to see if they have taken the time in advance to pull those numbers out, so that you're not flipping through a bunch of web pages or waiting for things to load and you've got, you know, Pitt Meadows Tower programmed into your phone. Yeah. Or
Kate, that's huge. Thanks for bringing that up. That's 100%. I love when I see a candidate come, they've had all the phone numbers set aside and documented right away for if they're going to have a flyaway to the north, to the east, to the south, to the west, whatever.
Up.
And the applicable airspace that drone could enter into. That's huge for me.
Yeah. So to summarize, there's nothing in the cars that says you need to have a CFS, a VTA, a VNC, a first aid kit, fire extinguisher. However, there are, it definitely shows a level of preparation when a candidate shows up with those things. And for the cost of adding those to your kit, it's not just a thing that you do to pass a flight review. It's
exactly.
Also going to be things that'll help you out with your operations moving forward. I've got a little bit of something that I've seen come up a few times that I feel like now is a good time to complain about.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
I have heard people or read people referencing controlled airspace as if it's restricted airspace, or using a term and saying, well, you can't fly in Vancouver because it's all restricted airspace.
Oh, wow.
And because I get a little bit pedantic with grammar and that kind of thing, this really bugs me, because restricted airspace is not the same thing as controlled airspace. Controlled airspace does have restrictions, as
right.
You know.
Yep.
Particularly if you're a basic pilot, there's restrictions that prevent you from operating in controlled airspace, but that does not make it restricted airspace.
Beautiful.
So just to clarify, when we talk about restricted airspace, we're talking about a particular type of Class F airspace. So Class F airspace, your little mnemonic tool to remember, is airspace that's used for fun, for firing, or places to stay the F out of.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the fun things, those are your CYAs, that's your advisory airspace. And as a basic or advanced pilot, you're fine to fly in those areas as long as you're paying attention to why it is advisory. Because a lot of the things that make Class F advisory airspace, CYAs, advisory, are things that will bring other airspace hazards very close to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So flight training, they can go down as low as they need to accomplish the flight training exercise that they're working on. You could have hang gliding, you could have parachuting. So things that will eventually get down into below 400 feet. So I want to be aware of those, but you are still allowed to fly there. And then Class F CYRs are the restricted airspace, the only true restricted airspace.
Right.
CYDs are pretty similar to CYRs, but they're only over international waters, so
Right. Chances
are you won't be encountering those on a regular basis. But flying over prisons, flying over military areas, those are your CYRs, and that is the only true restricted airspace. And that, again, is different from controlled airspace, which is Class A, Class B, Class C,
Right. Class
D, Class E.
Could we ever fly into a restricted airspace, Kate, at all?
You could, yeah. That's a good question. If you get permission from whatever group it's been restricted for.
It.
So if you get contacted by the warden of a prison and they say, we need you to do a perimeter, fly the perimeter here and see what's going on, then absolutely you can. But if you are dropping off goodies for your friends inside, then it's unlikely you'll get a permission to fly overhead. And there's a implication there with the Mavic Mini as well, because when you look at the some of the resources, like the NRC site selection tool, there is no way to kind of filter what's on there for micro drones, for the drones that are under 250 grams. So if your Mini is still weighing under 250 grams, you haven't put a skin on it or a sticker or anything that's going to make it that 1 gram heavier, prop guards, leg extensions, then you are allowed to fly that in controlled airspace. There's nothing inherently hazardous by operating your Mavic Mini in controlled airspace. However,
yeah,
you do need to understand the context of what's going on within that controlled airspace so that you're not accidentally and unknowingly launching on a departure or arrival path to an airport. You still have to stay clear. You have to not cause a hazard. But I mean, if you're on the edge of a control zone, you're 7 nautical miles away from the center of the airport, then I can't see why, if you're staying below tree line, for example, that why that would be inherently hazardous just because you're within controlled airspace. So you absolutely can fly in controlled airspace with your Mavic Mini, but you cannot fly in restricted airspace with your Mavic Mini. So that one, because it falls into a separate part of the CARS where it talks about aircraft being restricted from Class F CYRs, the restricted airspace, that one still applies to Mavic Minis. So don't fly your Minis over prisons either, but you can fly in controlled airspace as long as you do it without causing a hazard.
Excellent.
I feel a lot better now. Thanks for letting me get that off my chest.
No, and how about we do a little in conclusion? So in conclusion, we have the Class F airspace. And of that Class F airspace, we have CYA, which is advisory, CYR, which is restricted. And in the restricted airspace, we need permission from the controlling authority to be able to operate there. And then the CYD. We didn't go over CYD too much, but we're not going to really be flying even near the CYD. That's kind of the ATIS areas, usually over ocean. Yeah. Is that correct to say?
Yeah. Yep, you've got it. Nice summary.
Anything else you can think of with Class F and the restricted airspace? I don't want to confuse the listeners too much.
No, I think I probably beat that. Yeah. To a pulp, but if there are questions, everyone should know how to get a hold of us now.
Absolutely.
What about, I know one that you liked to ask
great.
People about.
Can't wait.
Runway numbering.
Oh, yeah. gosh, I wish we could have this like an open conversation with our listeners right now, because I'm not going to say appalled, but I'm very...
Surprised?
Yeah. Surprised by, you know, like people, a lot of people have some sort of education going in before doing this flight review, and a lot of people don't know how runways are numbered. And simply put, the runways are numbered according to like the compass bearing, like, and so basically the, like, not verbatim, but the way that the airplane is headed, and that's how the runways are numbered. So if I'm heading for let's say runway 09, I'm heading east. If I'm heading heading 270, I'm heading west, and that's the way the runways are numbered. So just become very familiar with that before you you come into the flight review.
Yeah, because that is important information. You're not just because you're not going to be necessarily using the runway for your takeoff and landing with your drone. The understanding how the runways are laid out at an airport and why airplanes are using the particular piece of pavement that they are and in what direction they are, that has a big impact on where you might get approved to fly as a drone operator. Because on one day, if the winds are from the north, the planes might be well out of your way on one side of the airport, and you can do those real estate shots over the houses that are being built. But then if the wind spins around and is now facing west, now you might be right onto an arrival or departure path, and now you've got altitude limitations that you weren't expecting and could cause some issues. So
absolutely. And just to kind of rewind a little bit there, I think it's important to note the another thing that a lot of the candidates don't really know about, the difference between an aerodrome and an airport. And Kate, you can tell me the difference there if you'd like.
Yeah, so all airports are aerodromes.
Yes.
But airports have a specific certificate that's issued for them. So they get inspected and maintained to certain standards. And an aerodrome is really anywhere where an aircraft is taking off or landing or being serviced or being hangared. And they have a really significant difference in how they're dealt with in the drone world. Because as a basic category pilot, you have to remain 3 nautical miles from airports and 1 nautical mile from heliports. So like the heliport, helicopter equivalent of an airport. But you don't with aerodromes. And that includes registered aerodromes. So even if you're seeing something in the Canada Flight Supplement, the CFS that we were talking about earlier, if you look in the OPR section, the operator section, and it says reg, then it's a registered aerodrome, not an airport, and you can fly close to those, even as a base category pilot.
Beautiful.
But if it says cert, then it's a certified aerodrome, which means it's an airport, and then you have those restrictions in place where you require an advanced certificate to operate close to them.
Awesome. And just remember that, all of you candidates, remember that exactly. So if a flight reviewer were to ask you, is this an aerodrome or an airport, you know where to look. So a CFS is a really good idea to have with you, because it gives you not only that information, but other information that we want you to be able to bring to our attention quite quickly.
And it's important to note too that just because an aerodrome is inside of controlled airspace doesn't necessarily make it an airport. And just because there is a aerodrome in uncontrolled airspace doesn't mean that it isn't an airport. So airspace does not equal, or airspace classification around an aerodrome does not tell you if it's certified or if it's registered or not. You can have any combination of those things. So the CFS really is the place to go. And if you don't believe me, look up the Chilliwack Airport, because it is a certified airport in Class G airspace, CYCW.
Beautiful.
There we go. With runway numbering, I always found it kind of interesting. Like when I was first learning it, I always had to draw them out.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think, okay, if I was standing on this runway with a compass in my hand, facing straight down the center line, the number that I'm reading off the top of the compass is going to be the number that they're using to paint the runway.
Yeah.
So why do they just put 27 on it if the heading of the runway is
273.
East, 270 or 273 or something like that?
Is that a question for me? If it is, I'd like to answer it.
Yeah, go for it.
It's rounded to the nearest zero.
Mm-hmm.
And then they chop off the last zero.
Yeah. Because they'll all end in zero.
They all end in zero.
Yeah. And that's something that can throw people off. You look at a runway where it says 09, and it looks initially like it's 9 degrees into the circle.
Yeah.
But it's actually 90 degrees. So that would be your east
Beautiful.
Runway. And this might end up being really confusing to say over over just voice, but if you're trying to figure out what the reciprocal of a runway is,
yeah,
if you either plus or minus 2 off the first digit, and then do the opposite to the second digit. Is that too confusing? So if it was runway 227, it said 27 on one end of the runway, you're trying to figure out what would be on the other side.
Yeah.
Subtract 2 off of the first digit, so it'd be 07.
Mm-hmm.
Add 2 to the second digit, it'd be 09.
Wow.
And there's your reciprocal. It's like plus or minus 180.
180, yeah.
But it's just a cheater way of doing it. It's my bad at mental math way of figuring it out.
I like it.
So runway numbering is important because it tells you where the aircraft are going to be below 400 feet.
Exactly.
Because you know what one's being used for taking off and landing. That's the point in a circuit where the aircraft are lowest, and that's where they can be a hazard to you.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. Might as well just roll into circuit patterns if you'd like to.
Let's do circuit patterns. So, you want to start with this one?
Yeah, like what is a circuit pattern?
Well, Vince, circuit patterns are the, kind of think of it like a, I should have thought of a better way to describe this. It's a pattern that's flown by typically fixed wing aircraft only. Helicopters tend to do whatever they want, whatever they get approved for. Pattern that's flown to allow aircraft to be really organized when they're taking off and landing or arriving and departing from an airport. So there's four legs to a circuit. It's flown in a rectangle pattern around that runway that's in use. So when the aircraft are on the runway and they apply power, they take off. That's called the departure leg.
Yep.
And then typically circuits are flown at 1,000 feet above the aerodrome elevation. Mm-hmm. And in a left-hand pattern. So they'll take off. Once they get to about 500 feet, they'll make a left-hand turn. That's called the crosswind leg.
Yeah.
And then they'll make another left-hand turn and level off there at 1,000 feet, and that'll be their downwind leg. And then that's flying parallel to the runway now, but in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they get about 45 degrees from the threshold of the runway, they'll start descending again. So then they'll start getting closer. That's called the base leg. So it's another left-hand turn onto the base leg. They're descending. And then somewhere around 700 to 500 feet, they're turning onto the final leg. And that's, again, where you're going to run into potentially a conflict. On that final leg as they descend to come back into land. And that would be if someone's like practicing takeoffs and landings.
Yeah.
You can arrive and depart onto different portions of the circuit legs depending on what kind of airport it is or aerodrome it is.
Right.
But that pattern's really important to understand and to know where in the CFS to look to know if the circuit is standard. Because a lot of places, especially out here in BC, because we have a lot of mountainous terrain, you'll have a circuit on one of the runways. If you've just got kind of one strip of pavement at an airport, you'll have a circuit that's left-hand on one of the runways and a right-hand on the other runway so that they both happen on the same side of the airport.
Right.
Because the other side is a mountain.
Exactly. So like the north side could be all mountainous and the south side could be flat.
Yeah.
Or just to add on to that, one side might be full of like a really populated area, like a city or a town with a lot of buildings that that they deem unsafe to fly over. So the circuit pattern will be over the less populated side normally.
Yeah.
But all that information is in the CFS.
Yeah. So down in the pro section for procedures, that's a handy spot to look at as well, so that you can kind of mentally map out based on the general wind direction where aircraft are going to be. In relation to your flight. And really the downwind leg, sure, it's important because it helps build the visual, but really you're focused on like the arrival and departure sides of that circuit. Where are they going to be?
Beautiful. And again, if you guys have any more questions with respect to this or any of the other topics that we've talked about, email us or let us know on social media.
Yeah, I think I've got a plan to put up some pictures on our Instagram too of circuit patterns.
Yeah.
And look at those conflict areas. So we'll get those rolling.
This is one of my big weaknesses as well when I do flight reviews, because airports, if you remember, it's 3 nautical miles away. We have to stay away unless we get prior permission from a controlling authority. But normally speaking, 3 miles away, so we don't really have to worry too much about circuit patterns in airports, but aerodromes, circuit patterns become a real big deal, because now we can fly within that circuit pattern, and if we're caught doing that, we're really bad and unsafe, and we can get fined for that. So stay away from circuit patterns for sure.
Yep. Yeah, it's one of those ones where it's like you need to know about it so that you have the context to avoid it.
Yeah,
because absolutely. That's the part that's in the cars. It's not that you're going to be flying the circuit yourself as a drone pilot.
Yeah.
But you need to understand where the other traffic are likely to be.
100%. That's a lot of the candidates. And I originally was a little bit upset that a lot of even basic or advanced, we had to know a lot about manned aviation and their rules and regulations. And I felt that it wasn't really necessary, but it is. And there is context for it for sure. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you guys are mad that you have to learn about what a circuit pattern is, that's why.
This is why. And I find that that happens with a lot of the topics. It's like why do I care about what's a ceiling? Like, I'm never flying that high with my drone. I'm always going to keep it line of sight. It's like, yes, but manned aircraft have to stay below ceilings.
Yeah.
And that might mean that on days where there's low cloud or low cloud moves in quickly, you suddenly have a lot of air traffic that's a lot lower than you're anticipating. So, yeah, it's...
there's a lot of stuff for sure. A
lot to learn, but... That's why we do things like this.
Definitely.
Excellent. Well, that's all the pet peeves that I had listed. I mean, suggestions of areas for people. Did you have anything else?
No, just know, make sure you know all the different classes of airspace. Like, there's definitely a few, like A and B, that we're not really, we don't really care too much. We need to know what they are. But for example, C, D, and E, those are big ones for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we know we need to know how, if we wanted to fly in them or we had to fly in them, how to get permission to do so.
Right.
We could talk about that more on another podcast for sure, get you guys to be involved with that one as well. But if you have any questions with respect to what Kate and I have talked about, or comments, or felt that it needed more discussion, just feel free to let us know.
Yeah. We can talk all day about this stuff.
You
get two pilots in one room.
Yeah.
Because you brought it up with the airspace, one final note. It's good to know about airspace laterally, like where the control zones are.
100%.
But also really good to know about airspace that's above you as well. There's a video that I've got tagged in my playlist on YouTube.
Yeah.
For anyone that's taken our course, that's a resource in any of them. It's my favorite YouTube videos about drones. And it's the first ever inverted Inspire flight.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think it was definitely not intentional.
Oh, it was not on purpose. Okay.
No, the guy, he went up, it looks to be like maybe 1,000, 1,500 feet or something like that. And he, this was years ago, but it was in Surrey.
Oh, I think I saw it,
The Inspire ended up going inverted and coming very quickly back down. And there's airspace up there. That's very close to where, not quite the right height, but YVR arrival.
Yeah, I remember that now.
So there's there is a possibility that in a flyaway event, it's not going to be at least not a completely lateral event.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe we should talk about emergencies next time.
Yeah, without a doubt. If you guys have any, insight on what we that you'd like to hear from us, again, email us. Let us know. We'd love to talk about it for sure.
And chances are you're not the first person to be wondering about it either. So don't feel embarrassed if it's like, I should probably know this, but I really want to talk about it more.
Yeah.
We love ideas like that. So
that's great.
Awesome.
Well, thanks, Kate.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. And maybe we'll get one or two more of these before we get a screaming infant in the background.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. All right. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye now.